Get in on all the sports action and your chance to win up to 100 times your cash with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is Rebecca Lowe, or Rebecca Lua, if you listen to Suboptimal Radio, and you are listening to Men in Blazers on the NBC Sports Network.
It's unbelievable!
Gem me up in the face, happy Spurs fans, welcome! Ah, sad Leicester fans, you will recognise a fellow sufferer. Let's do it, Davo.
Yeah, from the Embassy Row Studios in the crap part of Bedford, New York, and the crap part of Culver City, California, Rog. It's a Men in Blazers Spotify green room.
Oh, we are going to break down some of the exhilarating action that occurred last night. But I want to tell you a quick one. Last night, a dream that Fellaini lived next door to me. In the countryside here in Bedford, yeah, we walked our dogs together and crap. We didn't have we weren't mates, but we had an acknowledging relationship. And Fellaini came over to my house and just told me with a solemn face, he said, "I've decided to retire, but please don't tell anyone yet." And David, the question I got for you is, am I betraying his confidence just by telling him my dream? Am I?
Well, number one, I know that he's not up there in the crap part of Bedford, Rog, because I got somebody sent me a photo of Fellaini yesterday in St. Bart's. he was one of my favourite bars on Saint Jean Plage.
Bedford often mistaken for St. Bart's.
Yeah, no, I don't think you're betraying anything, Rog.
Well, you heard it here first, and when it happens, I'm going to claim it. Adam Gardner, getting down to the real talk in the chat. I'm a Spurs fan, Adam says, asking for advice from Rog on pants wetting. Fire that one up. We'll bring you into the question. We'll turn it into a how-to part of this green room, Davo. But take us through. Explain us what a green room is, mate.
Yeah, this is our weekly Spotify green room every Wednesday during the Premier League season. We are here to break down all the midweek narrative for those of you JFOPs joining here on the green room live on the app. Start asking your questions in the chat right now. We'll pull you up on stage later in the show to hear from you. For those of you listening to this on a delay via your pod radios, if you don't green room, do you even Pats and Dakar? The only way to actually participate in this pod is to join us here on green room. Rog, could you kick this off with a tour?
Yes, I definitely can. I've been gagging for this. Let me open this beauty. I raise my third first bud of the day to Comoros, the mighty football team ranked 132nd in the world, who beat Ghana yesterday. Mighty Ghana, 3-2 at the AFCON. One of the tournament's greatest and most beautiful ever shocks, giving the Black Stars a group stage exit for the first time in 16 years. Comoros, or the Islands of the Moon Witch, which is the Arabic name for them. They're a collection of small, mostly agricultural islands located in the Indian Ocean, just off the east coast of Africa. Population, 815,000 people, give or take. Second smallest side ever to compete at the tournament. And the result in Group C prompted jubilant scenes in the Comoros dressing room as they'd scored at the finals for the first time in history, recorded their maiden win. Scenes of joy only beaten by the delight of Arsenal fans around the world, who might just have Thomas Partey back for Arsenal's Premier League home match against Burnley on Sunday if they fancy playing it. Oh, to AFCON, to Comoros, courage.
Rog, got to be honest, haven't seen a lot of today's football. I was trying to follow along in the Jeopardy control room as we tried to slam in three episodes so that I was done.
Let's get to it. Leicester.
Bonkers. What a bonkers day of Premier League football, starting with Leicester City 2, Spurs 3. Leicester heading for what looked to be a routine 2-1 win behind goals from Patson Daka and James Maddison when Tottenham's Stephen Bergwijn scored twice in the 95th and 97th minutes for a massive comeback win for the Spurs. Antonio Conte makes it 9 games unbeaten in the league. Tottenham move within a point of fourth place. West Ham with within a point of fourth place West Ham. They've got 3 games in hand, Roger. They're going to be partying in the smoking rooms at Tottenham Lodge tonight, Rog.
Oh, Brendan Rodgers making a surreally bold claim that he has what it takes to become Everton's next manager. Spurs, in truth, boss this game, peppering 10 shots on goal in the first 23 minutes. Could have been 2-0, could have been 3-0. So, of course, Leicester took the lead. Patson Daka going smacker from an angle. Oh, I still don't know how he scored it. Harry Kane then equalised, maintaining what I believe will be the worst to first golden boot season we will not stop talking about. It's happening. It's 250th club goal. Then James Maddison, oh, exquisite chip, gave Leicester, I'd say, an undeserved lead. Is that being harsh, Leicester fans? In the 75th minute, Leicester fans started to sing deliriously as the seconds wound down on the clock. It's happening again. It's happening again. Laughing at Tottenham Hotspur. Only for Leicester to cede possession feebly twice and allow Steven Bergwijn, who, let me remind you, had not scored a Premier League goal all season, to net twice in stoppage time. Leicester, so Spursy. And the incredible thing, Tottenham fans, we want to hear from you in the comments. Let's bring you up and talk about how you're feeling about Antonio Conte still to lose a Premier League game as your walking cigarette Tottenham manager. Just 2 points now between 7th place and 4th place. It's tight.
Absolutely, Rog. Amazing stuff from Tottenham. Really good league form. Brentford 0, Manchester United 3. Wasn't it 3-1 in the end, maybe? United bounced back from that late collapse at Villa with a routine win over the Bees. Second half goals from Anthony Elanga, Mason Greenwood and Marcus Rashford. His first in 11 games all comps lift R-squared to a much-needed victory.
Ronnie back, Martial back on the bench. But the first half, my lord, highlight that first half, Brentford fans baiting United's away support, which is often stereotypically passed off as being just glory hunters from London by singing you only live around the corner, which is just a gorgeous bit of football bants. The feared, famed Rangnick press, not in evidence at all. De Gea, I mean, just routine, blasé, incredible saves, keeping United in the game. Because he keeps his face so stoic, De Gea, after doing the unimaginable, we almost forget this dude is superhuman. No shots on goal for United in the first half. As soon as they had one, they scored. Fred found Elanga deliciously. First touch, brilliant. Setting himself up, 2 head home. What a young talent. Lost very much in the bigger picture. Woe is me, fear of United's locker room culture imploding, this delirious young talent emerging, claiming his place. It's scoring United's first goal against Brentford in the league since, and I know you all know this, Charlie Mitten scored in December 1946. Bruno fed Greenwood to double the lead. United, they were like, oh crap, we implode at 2-0. Let's get another one. Rashford getting a goal he very much needed. And then an incredible shot. And there'll be much discussed about this. United fans, I'd love to hear what you think was actually said. Rashford scored. Credit the match director brilliantly deciding, you know what, we're not going to follow Rashford's celebration. This is only a kid that desperately needed a goal, that's been struggling, that's been, you know, even slightly harsh by United's fan base at Old Trafford. Why would we stay on him when we can cut immediately to the bench to see a shot of a very angry Ronaldo who'd been substituted, watching his team score a goal and having to have his manager put his arm around him and console him in that moment? Double R. I mean, just remarkable moment. Different half, though. Different United. And it needs to be said, United often incredibly beige under Rangnick, but they've only lost once since he joined. Big, big win for the optics.
Yeah. Very, very big win. And maybe, maybe this will kickstart the rest of their season. Yesterday's game, Rog, Brighton 1, Chelsea 1. Tommy Tuchel's offensive struggles / disinterest continue as the Chelsea capitulate a 1-goal lead on the South Coast to split the points with Brighton. If the City lose this weekend, if the City lost this weekend, didn't kill the title challenge, Rog, this one certainly did.
Eighth draw of the season. You know, sometimes I watch this Chelsea who started so dominantly. I remember, I'm old enough to remember the beginning of the season where we talked about how they looked like a winning machine. So many pieces, just a fist, so organised, no visible weaknesses. Lukaku a cheat code. But now, just this loss of confidence, of system, of belief. Where did Chelsea end? Where did the Arizona Cardinals begin? A 1-1 draw, it should be said, against a buzzy, effervescent, often excellent Brighton. You know, just 2 points for the last 12 available for Tuchel. His team looked dead-legged. They looked dead-eyed. We are tired. We look tired. We are. Double T said post-game, Dave Ruin. All the talk was actually not about the football in the wake of this one. It's about Ziyech's subdued celebration of his goal. Modern football, we actually don't care about the football. We just analyse the important things. Are you now locked into the prospect of a top four battle now, Davo? The City title race ship long sailed?
Yeah, and I think it is going to be a top four battle. I mean, I don't think this is brand new. I think this is something that, you know, you've built a team on defence. They now concede some pretty poor goals. This goal from a set piece, just, you know, yet another goal Chelsea conceding from a set piece. And the offense, which has never really ticked over since Tuchel joined, he's missing some key players. Yes, they've played a lot of games. They're still involved in a lot of competitions. And, you know, no one should be surprised at the number of fixtures. This is where a manager has to rotate his squad, and he's got to find some players informed. The alarming thing for me is just how listless they remain going forward.
If only you had Christian Pulisic on that squad.
Yeah, I know. He's disappeared, Rog. Okay, now to Everton, where perpetual big brother Big Dunk has been handed the reins as caretaker manager for their upcoming games. He heads a cadre of Everton legends who will patrol the touchline for your upcoming game with Stevie G's Aston Villa.
Yes, God bless you. Duncan Ferguson handed the chance to press his claims for the permanent manager's job. He's caretaker manager again alongside Leighton Baines. Seeing them out there on the training ground with the Everton team. They look like a footballing George Milton and Lenny Small from Of Mice and Men. I do love Dunk. I think they should change his name to Permanent Interim Manager. He's always going to be there to step in when we fire the permanent ones. And in terms of the Everton manager hire process, I'm sure there'll be some questions in the comments in this green room. Let's just say for now, the way the club are approaching this smacks of my worst case scenario, a team with no plan, no vision, no real infrastructure to help. It's just knee-jerk crap. Really, in this dire moment, watching something I love play at being a football club, like I'm playing at being a grown-up, it is so very, very painful. And the anger that fans feel, and there's a lot of it in this moment, it's not actually fully understood, I don't think, always by neutrals or by the media. And they always say, no, you place Everton, why are you fuming? It's not just about this moment. It's about a build-up over a decade, or for many fans more, of commitment and loyalty and passion and hope that's just not been reciprocated. And really, the owners need to understand this moment, a moment of breaking point in which they could take something which is precious and authentic and joyous, just the fan culture around Everton Football Club, a true community, a true family, and just utterly fritter it away. Madeline Hughes in the chat says, oh, Big Dunk and Leighton Baines could get us relegated to the National League and I'd still love them. I love your attitude, Madeline Hughes, and I'm sure there'll be more questions in the green room to come, David.
Yeah, absolutely. Fascinating situation. Can't wait to see.
Fascinating. Is that what you'd say if I got a kick in the down belows? Fascinating situation.
Well, yeah, that wouldn't be such a fascinating situation. It would just be a what happened. This is all about what is going to happen. You know, even the Athletic doesn't seem to know what's going to happen at Everton in their managerial search, Rog. It's going to be an interesting story. I still think you're going to be fine. Everything's going to be good. It's all upwards and onwards from here.
Yeah, that's what modern football's become, just cheering that or praying or hoping that there's three teams crapper than you. That is a very, you know, I don't mind living through Schadenfreude, but that the cheering, living, breathing, just praying that there's three teams crapper than you, that's where you do start to question exactly what your connection to the game really is. Talking about the game, we've got to quickly talk about Arsenal Football Club. I don't know if there'll be questions about this, but curious news today. Fans of the Chicago Black Sox, who are also Arsenal supporters, I wonder if you're feeling eerily like 1917? Is happening again. The Football Association currently investigating reports of suspicious betting activity around the awarding of a mysterious yellow card to a mysterious Arsenal player during a mysterious Premier League match this season. I think the suspicious thing that it was Xhaka and that it wasn't a red card, but Arsenal Twitter has been going berserk trying to analyse this, like Quincy MD. They seem to think it was Xhaka who took a late yellow card for time wasting in the 86th minute in bizarre circumstances after he'd done some insane fouls, really begged the ref for a yellow when Arsenal were 4-1 up against Leeds. But watch this space. It's a story, I mean, not unlike tennis and the old spot betting scandals, that I think is going to unfurl heavily in the next 10 days.
Wow. We'll be revisiting a lot of late yellow cards in the Premier League, let alone the National League over the next
Show season. Me one of Xhaka's that makes sense. You know what feels even better than correctly predicting the outcome of a football game? Winning up to 100 times your cash while doing it. Cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, an enormous selection of players and stat types. That's what makes Prize Picks America's number one fantasy sports app. We love easy gameplay here at Men in Blazers. Just love it. Easy gameplay. Prize Picks offers weekly promotions and special offers for the biggest moments of the sports season. Look, for Everton fans, it's not been the easiest campaign, although it hasn't been the worst either yet. But one way to make those Sean Dyche-induced draws more exciting, Prize Picks. Love smashing more on Jordan Pickford saves, less on Michael Keane passes completed, and much, much less on Beto goal contributions. Oh, it allows me to feel good about feeling bad. Download the app today and use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator, Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favourites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this, as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend, have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage.
Okay, Rog, let us get to the Q&A portion of the show. There's so much to talk about. We're going to call you up onto the stage, invite you to speak. When you move to the stage, please just remember to stay muted until we call on you. And a reminder to everyone listening, the only way you can ask a question is to actually join us here on the Green Room. Rog,
bank in your questions into the comments. Your questions are life. This is the part of this podcast that we live for at Men in Blazers. First one up. Oh, we've got to get to Spurs. Come on up. One of the great half-rhyming names of Men in Blazers fandom. It's Carson Monson. Carson, where are you? What's your question?
Calling from Salt Lake City. Good to be back in the green room. Yeah, it's been a while, but glad to be talking Spurs again. I think the last time we talked about it was when Kane stuck around. So, been a rough start to the season. Really excited about the last nine games. With Conte in position, not having lost yet, they've got four in hand against Chelsea. If they win three out of four, they move into third. Is this Spurs team now a top three team?
Davo, our resident Antonio Conte expert.
Yeah, games in hand. Games in hand. There are so many games in hand up and down the Premier League. It's, you know, it's very easy to count them and to imagine that getting those 8 points and making up that difference over the next four games is going to be easy, but it never is in the Premier League. I would say that if you watch Tottenham play Chelsea over two legs in the Carabao Cup, I know that's not the Premier League, it's a very different thing. You wouldn't...
Better.
Yeah, you wouldn't more believe coveted. Those two teams could be that close to each other. But, you know, amazingly, a week is a very long time in football, and Tottenham have got a lot of upward momentum. Chelsea seem to be in a bit of a spiral. And I think, as I said earlier, I think it's going to be very, very competitive for those top four positions, including third place.
We have never been more about recency bias than we are in football in this moment. And I think the fact that deliciously Premier League writers who, you know, we used to joke that there were possibly script writers for the game that we love to watch, that it's one of the greatest telenovelas played out live. We always used to say without a script. I think we've stopped saying the without a script part now that we all know. You know, it's a bit like when we were kids, we thought the wrestling was real. I mean, God, Premier League script writers, what an incredible pivot, giving Spurs fans surging hope just as soon as they plough into Chelsea against Tottenham on Sunday, 11:30 a.m. I mean, just what incredible creative plot pointing in that Premier League writers' room. And so what I'd say is, you know, I love Spurs. There's so much about them that I admire. We can cut and paste several times. We talked about this in the podcast, just a tradition of effervescence and entertainment. You know, I do admire and adore Harry Kane. Sonny, to me, is a bolt of human joy who just, I mean, what a remarkable narrative he brings to the field. And God, that Chelsea game, I think let's just wait and see and reserve for next week's green room before we say that. You know, Antonio Conte is like juggling axes. You know, you can look incredible when you juggle axes. You can also slice your finger off. They've brought Gelignite into that infrastructure. And God, they're, you know, so close to the end of the transfer window. If they win against Chelsea at the weekend, we can have that conversation. We can feel the bullion. We have seen their context, their weight class. We see what he's brought to this team, to that collective, that they are winners who can slay sizable opposition, like a giant opposition, and bring them down to their level. But lose, and then it's Conte versus Dan Levy with you know, just over a week left in that transfer window. Just the mood swings that can occur in that showdown, that epic showdown between two, you know, just a Dan Levy's an incredible negotiator. I don't believe Antonio Conte doesn't negotiate, does he, David? It's just, I mean, you've negotiated with people like Antonio Conte that have their way and their way only.
I'm trying to think of a single moment when I've ever seen Antonio Conte at any point, including when he's being interviewed, when I've actually seen him listen. He's not someone who listens. He's someone who acts and speaks and emotes. And that's where he gets all of his energy from. He's not a listener.
There's an element that we know he's very Italian. There's an element of, never really thought about this before, there's an element of Antonio Conte that's actually quite Dothraki. You know, swords out, behead the person in front of you first, ask questions later. And so there's something deeply, yeah. They've brought something deeply unstable. So a winner, a victor, you know, just a gladiator. But he only knows one thing. And if that one thing, if he's not set up to do that one thing, I think the instability can still occur, even though I'm rooting against it. God love you. Thanks for your question. Happy.
Yeah, I think he wears a little more stage makeup than a Dothraki. There's a little bit more special prosthetics going on.
Jeff Moore in the chat, in reference to Arsenal, the Arsenal Black Sox, says, oh, is it shoeless granite? We have to wait and see before we make those baseless accusations that it was Xhaka. Next one up. Come on, be with us. If it isn't our official Virginia Tech football correspondent in the chat, Ray, remind us where you're from.
Good evening, gentlemen. How are you guys doing? Yes, I'm from Western Pennsylvania by means of Cleveland, Ohio.
Good to jam us up in the face.
Good to be speaking with you guys again. Well, you guys had sort of touched on it, but when it comes to Conte and, you know, no losses in 9 games in the league and such like that, is he going to get the Poch treatment? You know, Pochettino is sort of, you know, punching above his weight with the squad that he has. Conte is coming in, winning games. Do you think the board decides, oh, hey, we don't need to spend any money on signings. We're going to get Romero and Son and Dyer back. They'll be like new signings. Do you think that's going to be the way it'll go, or do you think Conte will get his way and get some signings in the window?
I love the reference to the Tottenham board. You don't usually hear it talked about as the board, just usually as Dan Levy, but that's a good nickname for him, the Tottenham board. it's tough to know. I think he's done everything that could possibly have been asked of him coming in after Papa Smurf and coming in and doing so well with this team. And I think he really deserves to get what Pochettino never really got, which is the full support and to get a decent transfer window, because Tottenham could really kick on. January might not be the best time to do it. This might not be a great transfer window for multiple reasons. It might be better for him to get it in the summer, but he's going to need support at some point to build that squad and allow them to play football the way that Antonio Conte really likes to play football, because I don't think he's really got the players there that serve the kind of systems, that four at the back system that he really likes to play.
This is the key question, as you framed it so beautiful. Tottenham board, obviously, is the hotel next to Tottenham Lodge. But, there's some deadwood that will be shifted. There has to be shifted. Conte is, for him to have the squad, what Conte needs from a squad is total, sheer, utter commitment. That's what he asks from his players, even very average players. He's fine with them as long as they get. I mean, Dyer, you watch Dyer under Conte, that's what he wants. That's what he expects. That's what he demands from his players. So there are a number of players that do not fit that profile. I think we've named them already. Chief, Dele, God, that cautionary tale, and Dombele. And I think it's going to be, it's fascinating. Conte will want and need and demand that player. There will be a player coming in. Levy will try as much as he can to bring in that player, only if he can shift the deadwood. And that is going to be the dance of death between the two of them. I will say the Premier League is better when Tottenham are truly joyful. And I still mourn when Pochettino perform alchemy for that season where there was not a single player in the transfer windows, and yet he kept them up. It's almost an act of sheer levitation. And Conte will not do that. Conte will not stand for that. Conte will burn it all down immediately. Conte will quit on the job rather than put himself in that position. Pochettino is a nice guy. Conte does not pretend to be a nice guy. Although I've got to say, from producer J-Dub's perspective, we fear Tottenham selling their players. It is Tottenham, more than any other team, get players who complicate the Premier League pronouncer list more than any other football team. And it's taken about 8 seasons, but I believe for the first time in 8 seasons, I can now actually pronounce all of their names perfectly. Lamella was the last one that was. I could never work out whether it was Lamella or Lamella. Brain couldn't get my head around it. It's taken me 8 seasons to be pretty perfect on the bloody Tottenham team list, and I think it's all going to change.
Roger,
I only just got Harry Kane.
Dyer.
I didn't know you had to drop the H. I didn't know. Come on up. Oh, let's have you, old friend. If it isn't the great Andrew Millington, remind us where you're from and what's your question.
Good evening, gentlemen. I am from Corpus Christi, Texas.
Double C.
So my question is, so everyone knows misery loves company, and now Arsenal and Spurs are winning, so I'm feeling kind of lonely over here as an Everton supporter. So I'm wondering which fan base should be my new sadnap little spoon.
You're asking who should be as an Evertonian. You like to look left and right and know that it's not just us who are in the crap. Is that really your approach to life, Andrew Millington?
Yeah, and I'm afraid it's Burnley, because dare I say that would make us looky-likies.
Looky like is Andrew Millington. Can I just say one thing, though? And I want to make it clear, Arsenal fans for the past three or four seasons, and particularly at the beginning of the season, they were like, you never say a good word about Arsenal. You never talk nicely about the team. And the reality is, as we keep saying, you need to, like, ultimately, we're just reflecting on performances in games. And when Arsenal play badly, we have to talk about that. Now they're playing Arsenal, these first three games, they were in a dark place. They were in the sunken place. They were in the lonely place. I am so bloody happy they are not with us. I'm happy they're flirting. I mean, God, this betting scandal aside, Granit Xhaka loves site credits. I just say that the honest truth is, I'm happy they're not with us. That's my approach. I wouldn't want anyone right now. I wouldn't want anyone to be in the Everton place, Andrew Millington. Don't draw strength from the fact that others are in it. We're in the upside down. We're Bob. We're there on our own, Millington. We've just got to work out, how do we get out of this? And that's what's so bloody frustrating about this. It's clear what we need to do to get out of it. It will take an owner who has just put huge amount of money in a garbage can and set it on fire to actually say, you know what? I'm not going to put it in the garbage can and set it on fire. I've just heard a rumor. You can actually use money to turn the club into a good club. Let me do it that way, and to change his approach. And unless that happens, I'm not going to wish ill on anybody else. By the way, Sean Dyche is no person's little spoon. Let's just get that straight. Dave-o.
I'm so proud of you, Rod. That was such a mature answer, and you've grown.
I don't believe it for a second, yeah, any of what I just said.
Usually you enjoy other people's misery. It's one thing that really keeps you company at all times. But I appreciate that. I think you've really grown. And at the same time, I'm quite happy that Chelsea are going through a sort of, you know, a pretty poor patch of form to coincide, as though we're showing solidarity with you and your Everton crisis.
I'm sure there's going to be more Everton, so we'll save it sparingly and bring it up to the stage. If it isn't the great Amy Priborski. Amy, remind us where you're from and what's your question.
Hey, Raj, I'm in Portland, Oregon.
God, I miss that city more than I can tell you. God bless you in the romantic heart of America's footballing culture. How you doing, Amy?
I'm doing all right. We are Soccer City, so it's the place to be. I'm ready for the MLS to start so I can see some live games. But yeah, it's good. I asked a few questions. The one I really want to know is about Everton and its new savior manager, which I feel is going to be an American again. And I want to know if you guys think that there's an MLS manager that could save Everton, and is it Bruce Arena?
By save Everton, do you mean destroy them and just drag them immediately down to the darkest depths, or do you mean somebody else? Amy?
I've seen...
Just point of qualification.
I'm seeing all of these... MLS superstars going off to Europe, and maybe it's time for one of our managers to make the trip again. Since Bob Bradley did it, he paved the way. Is there another?
The streets will never forget Phil Bob Neville. Bradley, Dave.
Welcome back, Phil Neville. I love this. I love this narrative. I mean, Rog, this is your area of expertise, American managers or American-based managers going back to the club you love. I'm not sure that there's anybody on your wish list.
I adore American footballing culture, Amy. I want to make that clear. And I was so pained by Bob Bradley's Swansea experience, mostly because football's a deeply conservative culture, and you know, they gave us one chance, and we, you know, it was a tough situation that he landed in, but it was a tough experience, and it kind of put the taking an American manager that we all dream about back a lot. Jesse Marsh is a great manager. Also found it deeply complicated, that setting within the Red Bull, kind of the escalating Red Bull tiers of excellence. And here's what I would say is, God, this pains me. You know, we are currently seeing our women have dominated world football. So we've ticked that box. And then our men, we're currently in a golden wave of talent and, you know, going en masse to America, to Europe, which is exactly where they should be. It's been a year, if we're being honest, of reality for the dreams of our players, where many of them have given us great moments that we'll never forget. But they've also met the reality of the difficulty. You know, you look at You look at what's happening at Roma with Brian, and just, you know, we hoped he'd be a young prodigy, and he's going to have to drop down a level and keep climbing what Disraeli called about politics, the slippery pole of English politics. European football is also a slippery pole. There's ups and there's downs. All our players, Gio, you know, injured. Christian, we've talked ad nauseam about his success and challenges. Coaching, men's coaching in particular, is just the one area that's still acknowledged that American football is behind the curve. When you speak to individuals, even in the American game, they acknowledge, you know, there's not been the cross-pollination of ideas that there has been in Europe, where it's really been about, you look, particularly in English coaching was crap, acknowledged to be crap. And it took an influx of European ideas coming into the English game to elevate the thinking, the tactical acumen, the complex understanding of the game. We were really primitive in, Dave, you remember English managers, just so, I mean, troglodyte, we've seen the death rattle of them in the Big Sams and the Steve Bruces, right?
I mean, to be fair, they grew up playing the game and learning how to coach when English football, even in the old Division One and the early days of the Premier League, was played on pitches literally made of mud. There was no grass, certainly around the penalty areas or the goal mouths or the centre of Premier League fields until at least the late 1990s, early 2000s. And, you know, raised by football on mud, they played a certain style, a Allardycian version of football, which would be unrecognisable to most modern football fans. But you're absolutely right. I mean, English managers were so far behind. English coaching was so far behind. And, you know, I do hope that, you know, pursuant to the question, that over the next few years, we've started to see more American players drift over to Europe and, you know, a few in the Premier League. I hope we're going to see some managers follow.
But the reality is, and it's self-admitted within American footballing circles, just the quality of coaching is like the last level of the game that really needs to be deeply invested in and improved before we become, quote, a truly normal footballing nation. So what I would love to see first, to be more serious, like, yeah, I'd love this one to go. I'd love if Jesse Marsh took over at Everton, by the way. It would give me great joy to see him get another look. But I also can't stand another high-profile failure. We can't just take over Premier League jobs. We need more Premier League assistants. There needs to be more American men's coaches doing their apprenticeships. And you look at Bruce Arena, an incredible American coach without peer. But then you look at his record, and why did he never leave America? Why did he? He almost did. I've spoken to him about it. You know, there was a Scandinavian club, he says, that almost came in for him. It almost worked out. It didn't for reasons that he explains, and I can't remember, to be candid. But we need our best coaches to test themselves, like our players, against the best, for the best, with the best. We need to have an influx of American male coaches go to Europe, do their apprenticeships as assistants first, and then take the head. There's no jumping the process. They need to learn, and then they need to, and we need to grow. But God, I cannot wait for that day when Everton do have an American coach who will be able to actually do the job bloody well. Kate Rollo, oh, a tying question. Kate, where are you? And what's your question?
Yes. Hi, Roger and Devo. I'm calling you from Arlington, Virginia.
Hey, welcome, Kate.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I'm a long-time listener.
A joy to have you, Kate. By the way, we have more listeners in Arlington. I mean, we are the official pod of the Orange Line, I think, Kate. I don't know what it is, but it's like we can't have a green room about at least five Arlington individuals. It's a joy to be with you. What's your question?
So with all this talk of managers, I was wondering, just, is it crazy out of the box to imagine that a female manager or from America might go over to manage a Premier League team? Is that out of the question? Is that 10 years down the line? What do you think?
When will we see a female manager in the Premier League? What an incredible question. In the week in which Emma Hayes was made Women's Manager of the Year by FIFA for her work with Chelsea women, Dave.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I do think, I mean, it may be a step too far to be even trying to put a timeline on an American woman coming over. I think we've got to say, like, when will we see a female manager in the Premier League, or frankly, the Championship, or, you know, in any of the top leagues of European football? I think Emma Hayes has got a lot of acclaim, partly because of the success she's had at Chelsea, the way that team play, the way she speaks to the media, the way she handles herself, the way she, you know, tactically she's seen as being very astute. So, you know, I think she's brought the game a long way. You know, we're only just, you know, many football fans are only just adjusting to listening to women commentating on the men's game. But I hope this is the next move. You'll probably start to see it with assistants first, or a lot of the, you know, in the back rooms of these clubs. But I think it would be very welcome. There's no reason why a woman couldn't do that job just as well as a man.
Kate, I am going to tell you, I am actually filming with Emma Hayes, please God, on Friday, which I've rarely been more excited to speak to a football figure as I am to speak to Emma Hayes, who I admire, her story, her growth, her development, her lessons to success and failure. So I'm going to ask her that question. But I do know from my research on Emma, you know, she's often linked to men's jobs. She is just, she's such a cohesive tactical thinker. And she actually covered the Euros for, I think, the BBC this summer and blew away the English watching audience, who were like, oh my God, why can't everyone talk about football in such a complicated way, but so accessibly and brilliantly? So there's no doubt she has it. But one of the things I'm interested in is the more Emma succeeded, the more she's talked about how she's sick of men dominating the coaching ranks in the women's league, and that there's a tension. Like she wants to have you know, more women coaches in the women's game, but she also realised the women's game is, and she's fought to make it more idiosyncratic, to understand how the sports science is different for women players with the ACL tears. I mean, she's delved into, you know, developing training, special training regimens around menstrual cycles. She's really delved into the uniqueness of women's football. And so she's almost made the two fields slightly more distinct. But I'm going to ask her that question, Kate. I will report back and we will learn together. Thank you for your question. Thank you for representing Arlington, Virginia, which is contractually obliged to throw up at least two questions in every green room. Come be with us. Oh, the great John Kukin. Let's talk Arsenal. Remind us where you're from and what's your question.
Hey, Raj and Devo. This is John calling in from Boston, Massachusetts.
Where about in Boston, John?
I am in Brighton. I'm a student at Boston College.
God bless you. I've got so many questions, but I get in this part of the podcast when we're trying to fight in every single question, get everybody up, I get zapped if I ask too many things. But my God, you're in Kevin Hayes country and I love you for it. What's your question, John?
So as a long-suffering Arsenal fan, I'm used to horrible news and darkness, but I just want to ask, with the whole Oba transfer debacle, this whole yellow card bribery thing, the suspect North London derby postponement, should we compete in CONCACAF next year? And as a resident of Matt Turner country, can we please get Matt Turner if we transfer?
Should Arsenal compete in CONCACAF? That's genuinely, oh my God, that is a through the looking glass question. CONCACAF, we've just decided in the middle of World Cup qualifying that they will allow VAR in the final rounds of qualifying. They've clearly worked out a way to...
Are they going to allow gambling on yellow cards happening at the end of matches?
That's why they've done it. On the same day, on the same day as Arsenal get into betting problem, VAR, CONCACAF, like, what? You mean we can make money by jacking people with VAR? How badly do you want that goal, Jamaica? Do you want that goal ruled off? How? Show us the money. It's just going to be, I mean, there's clearly leverage, bribery, and utterly, there's apartments for cats. Opportunities in VAR up the wazoo, Devo. But is this really like Arsenal happiness? Is this Devo? Can there not be Arsenal happiness without a human darkness just crashing into it and threatening to undermine everything?
Yeah, I sort of feel like this Arsenal happiness is something a little different, notwithstanding, you know, today's news. I think there is just...
I think when Dave is about to say something nice about Arsenal Football Club, his phone automatically overrides it.
Dave, are you there?
Dave, he just physically cannot. He has a special green room filter that just will not allow him to say nice things about Arsenal. You know, John, God love, you know, this could be a story, the betting thing. It could go one of two ways. I said earlier that I think it's one that we're going to hear a lot more about over the next 10 days. There's also the possibility that this could be so horrific that it gets completely swept under football's carpet and we never hear about anything about it again. So just enjoy. I think if I'm being an Arsenal fan, isn't it? Just enjoy the moment. Just enjoy the good vibes. Just enjoy the everything. Revel in it. Do not fear the darkness. Enjoy being top of the taste filter table. Just amazing jerseys. Just get your dubs wherever you can get them, John Cookin, and don't be afraid of the dark. We are going to quickly run through the rest of the questions in every regard. Come on up, David Mathis. Come be with us, you beautiful human being. Tell us where you are and what's your question.
What's up, Raj? Long time, first time from Muscatine, Iowa, small town.
Oh, mate, that is a gorgeous part of this country. I'd long to be with you more than I can say. I once drove right across Iowa, and it was one of the most calming and beautiful in an open-top car. I can't remember whether I stole it. I was like 17 or 18. It was really a beautiful experience. And just hearing your voice in that. Where are you from originally?
From Muscatine there.
Oh, God bless you. Who'd
about
you take?
10 minutes from the interstate, so you were right by my house. Fan of Liverpool.
May have been your car, David, that I jacked, but go on. That's a conversation for another time. You're a fan of Liverpool. Welcome. Liverpool supporters are welcome here too in the green room. It's a big tent. What's your question?
I'll be quick. Question on the Kellen Acosta situation in MLS. Do you think an actual European offer came? And then what responsibility or duty does MLS have to try to either push on US MNT players or hold on to the older players like Kellen who wouldn't have a long career in Europe?
You know, God, Kellen Acosta, what I can say is, you know, we interviewed him, was it 4 years ago when he was breaking through and really defining himself? It could have been even longer. I just remember there was a day where we drove up to somewhere in Connecticut and interviewed him and the beautiful, beautiful, beautiful ball, Bradley Guzan. And he'd just broken through, just started to define himself, had a lot of buzz around him. And I've rarely met a player more ready and more excited and more eager to move to Europe. Like this was before Pulisic had moved to Chelsea. And he was just absolutely, you know, just buzzing. And that's all he wanted to talk about. It was in Hartford, Connecticut, in an Econo Lodge or something. It was during a very weird US men's national team camp that I can't remember. So this is a gentleman that desperately, desperately wanted to go. And ultimately... I have never understood, because I've watched his development, we've all watched his development, I have peaks and troughs, and he never went and probably will never go. I think we've broken the moment where MLS actually holds on to its players. That was a very 2013 era where MLS thought that its iteration was to hold on to US talent and be the league where the men's national team players played their stuff. That has been utterly since 2014, really since 2017, that has been destroyed as a reality. I don't know. I'm not Kellen Acosta's agent. I don't know why in this particular moment he didn't go and the wares and the force of that. I do look at his career as I wonder when he retires, the kind of agony, the kind of regret, if any, that he will feel in that moment. But there's no doubt, there's not a single player who can go to Europe other than Jordan Morris that I know of who is not going there. It's just knowing at this moment, if you want to fulfill your greatest potential, it's exactly where you need to go. It's where you will go. It doesn't make MLS worse. I mean, MLS has a massive role in the kind of the food chain hierarchy of leagues. It's defining itself. It's upticking. But young American talent, if they, you know, if they can, they need to get over there as soon and as possible as they can. We are going to take an old friend. Come on back up, you beautiful human being. It's the great Andrew James.
Grand sirs all the way. It is so great to see y'all. And for Devo, I have to say the connection. We have to give him the Price is Right sound.
He's back for you, Andrew Jones. He just didn't want to say nice things about Arsenal, did you, David?
I did, and I said, well, I thought everybody could hear me. I was saying such lovely things about Arsenal, and they've been lost to the ether, bro.
Well, Dave, I definitely have a gift for you, but first for the great Raj Bennett, because a great Twitter moment for him happened this week.
They say Jimbo is our man. If Jimmy can't do it, I sure can.
He had the great, great quarterback of the Chicago Bears.
Why and the punky QB known as McMahon. If I can't do it, nobody can.
Let him jam now. He got the incredible follow from him. And Davo, you missed this last week in terms of the great two audio sounds that Sir Bennett had to get from me. And of course, this indelible moment that you certainly enjoyed, Davo, when it was taking place and happening. In live time.
The baby giraffe!
So, Raj, I had to make sure Davo got that since he wasn't here last week.
I've got to tell you, hearing Martin Tyler's Tylergasm after Everton's last great moment, it is a bit like watching in the Oscars when they do the recently departed and you just have to relive those you've lost along the way. It makes me just miss an Everton where I still had hope. Andrew Jones, thank you for bringing that back into my life. You're a gorgeous man. You just keep revving your stuff, Andrew Jones. I doubt there's a question. Is it just sounds? Are you just unleashing the sound?
Oh, there's still a question because, Dave, I have to make sure, Sir Bennett, that he gets the whole love there too, because yesterday was a moment that Thomas Tuchel had his actual most sympathetic moment ever in history when he was...
Wow.
You need to some days off. We have now 2 days off. And
I felt for him right there, Dave, to the point it almost made me harken back to the great Chelsea manager. That's number one.
Respect, man.
To the point, do you think yesterday is a sympathy term in terms of the hard-edged personality that Sir Thomas Tuchel is, in that he may become at least endearing to the point that Chelsea finishes their season now?
Borderline human, would you say?
Borderline human, yeah. I don't know. Number one, I got to congratulate you. This is more production value than has ever gone into any Men in Blazers show ever.
Classy, sir.
It's phenomenal. By the way, are these real clips, or are you doing these all as impersonations? Are these is that you doing your Thomas Tuchel, or is that just a clip? I'm so confused. Can you make any noise in the world that we can just say, like, boom?
I'm telling you. You can do it. If I was able to do that, Frank Caliendo would be taking lessons and notes from me, and I would have more money than both Jeff Bezos and Carlos Slim combined. If that was certainly, you know, me with that. But unfortunately, Raj, I have to rely on the goodness of technology in this whole way with that.
P-Brain didn't understand. When you say, you don't have to say more money than Carlos Slim and Jeff Bezos. You can just say... Toronto FC DP money is what we call it in the business world. Davo, is Tuchel almost become a human?
Not to me. I haven't made the sympathy turn yet with Thomas Tuchel. Maybe I will. He's just got those very hollow cheeks, Rog. There's not a lot of meat on his bones. So he hasn't quite made it with me, but maybe at some point. It's tough for me to sympathize with the Chelsea manager complaining about how all of his players are tired. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, it could happen. I could feel sorry for him, I suppose.
I love him. I felt deeply, deeply wounded for him. I mean, he's got this. It's just like it was only 2 months ago that he set this new bar for what managers could be expected to do.
Mm-hmm.
In football, you know, Ole has got the Tuchel thorn in his side. Tuchel came in and immediately transferred. And for him to, you know, I'm flying. And then suddenly just to have the engine stall and just sputter out. I feel the darkness, particularly as we know, you know, at Chelsea, possibly the most unforgiving club for him to have that experience. And we can hear the death rattle. He sees the death rattle. He knows he's going to be at Spurs in 2 seasons' time. That's the look we see in his eyes, David. He already knows it's come. Has it come to this? Oh,
hey.
Yeah.
He could be
at Everton by the All-Star break, Rog.
He could. In 5 seasons, he could be washing up at Everton, Davo, wearing the Hummel, wearing the just head to toe, just clad in Hummel in every way. Andrew Jones, can you gem this man up? He's an incredible human being. We try and bring joy in this green room, Andrew. We are amateurs at joy. You are a professional, and we marvel at what you're doing, big man.
Well, great, sirs. I appreciate that all the way, Sir Bennett and Sir Davies. And Sir Bennett, I have to say, for full Everton, Spotify, Green Room, explosion of fan emotion, you and Ariel Helwani, I hope that you gentlemen are able to have Ariel Helwani on the social, because he's on, of course, Green Room in terms of the MMA shows, but he's a big Everton fan.
Is Ariel on the Green Rooms?
Yes, I love that.
Can I say, what an incredible human being. I look at him and mm-hmm. I admire what he's doing. So I admire what he does. I admire the way he does it. He is a world-class humor. Is Ariel an Everton fan?
Yes, he's massive to the point where he loves them just as much as Josh Allen and the Bills. This is an insane moment
because Ariel is, I think of him as an incredibly smart human being with incredible taste. And then he goes and does an Everton fan. We all have our weaknesses. Andrew Jones, we will make that happen. I love that human being. Godspeed, Godspeed, Godspeed. Gem Andrew Jones up in the face, Dave. Oh, time please, just for one more question. From a very shy Herm Hamersky, must be American. We don't have Herm Hamerskys in England, do we, David?
We do not.
He's not accepting a speaker request because he's shy.
But no, Herm! Herm!
Andrew, stay with us. God love you. Oh, my God. How many buttons does Andrew Jones have on? Andrew, you need to permanently be on, just firing away in the background.
Oh, for sure.
Max Headroom. I love
this. This is incredible. Double H wants to know this question, Davo, and you're a connoisseur. And I actually, I asked this question over Twitter because I'm having coffee problems. What is the best coffee bean in the world? This is going to be an ongoing one. It's like asking what's the best cheesesteak in Philadelphia. Do you have a Davo coffee bean of choice?
Yeah, well, the one at Sunset and Holloway in West Hollywood is very good, Rog. There's an excellent coffee bean. I like a Kenyan bean. I like a Kenyan coffee bean. I don't know what the exact terms, but when I buy coffee for my Nespresso, I love the Kenyan special editions. I love the Cuban special editions. Mm. So those would be my choices.
Yeah, I only asked the question. I've been a deep, deep devotee of a coffee shop in Manhattan, a very small two chain. I think they lost one of their stores in COVID. They are going under with great sadness. It pains me. I've been buying their coffee all the way through COVID. I'm a big Colombian coffee fan. I adore it. I was on that before Yerry Mina. I was on the Colombian coffee. And the honest truth, now they've gone under, I am just devastated. And I am looking for the next great Colombian coffee. So I am now in the midst of just, it's really a weird, I'm back. It's like being single and dating, trying all kinds of bloody coffees. I don't know what it is. I will say quick shout out to Small World in Princeton, New Jersey. I'm on there now. Very, very good indeed, and a true, true joy. But it's a quest that is going to take weeks because this show, if it runs on anything, for J-Dubs and myself, it runs on the coffee. So tweet us, email us. We need all
And
of
I got a great one, FFPs. Too.
You do. Andrew Jones, what is it? Gem us up in the face.
Got two right there. First, in terms of the Hawaiian Koa coffee bean, because Hawaii, with this weather here in Brooklyn, New York, was certainly an ideal destination. And in terms of an AFCON type shout out, the Ethiopian Hara coffee bean. Recommend that as someone who's a half coffee connoisseur, but has fully connoisseurs of coffee in the family. those two I would suggest as ones that you would like.
Last question. Is there anything Andrew Jones doesn't do, Dave?
He's amazing.
But he makes an incredible, he's got depths of barista knowledge. Just wait till we get on the cocktails of Andrew Jones. Dave, we've got to wrap this beauty up, though. We will be back on Friday with WGFOP. We are on Sunday, 2:30 on Peacock, with a great Mark Cuban dropping so much bloody knowledge about football, but also about the world of sports and how it's transforming. It is a conversation that, I mean, to be candid, I save it in every regard. 2:30, Peacock. Dave, take us home, daddy-o.
Yeah, that is it for this Men in Blazers Spotify Green Room and the show within the show, the Andrew Jones show within our Men in Blazers Spotify Green Room. It could be like The Simpsons in the middle of Tracey Ullman. I love it.
And then Itchy and Scratchy within The Simpsons.
Yeah, a quick reminder that the Men in Blazers TV show returns Sunday, January 23rd at 2:30 p.m. on Peacock with special guest Mark Cuban. And if you've missed any of our shows this season, first of all, well done. Second of all, every episode is now on Peacock On Demand. John Oliver, Will Ferrell, and posthumously, Rafa Benitez-Rodge. Can we get one final toast to bring us home?
Oh, I want to raise a shot of Jägermeister, the bolt of human emotion in a shot glass, to Salima Mukansanga, the Rwandan, who yesterday became the first ever woman referee to officiate at the African Cup of Nations in its entire 65-year-old history. Oh, when she oversaw the Group B clash, Zimbabwe surprise 2-1 win over Guinea on Tuesday night. Incredible to witness. The ref had the good sense to give Naby Keita his second yellow card of the tournament late on. He's now suspended for Guinea's round of 16 fixture. And as CAF head of referees, Eddie Mele, said, this moment is not just for Salima, but for every young girl in Africa who has passion for football and who sees herself as a referee in the future. May many, many, many follow in Salima's footsteps, David.
Yeah, those were beautiful images. Vanderpunt, Rog.
War pig!
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Boards win, boards win.
Take that, Gloria.
Boards lose.
To Tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fine America. Love you, Davo.
Love you, Rog.
Love you, Andrew Jones.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.